Welcome everyone to another edition of the Chilling with the Villain podcast. I am your host, the one true villain, Marty Skirl, and joining me as always, the producer of the show, Mr. Samuel Scott. And today we have a very special episode. I feel like every episode I try and advertise a special. They are special. Today we're not reviewing a classic wrestling show as such, but we're doing a Q&A, a Ask Me Anything. Ask Marty and Sam anything. So we ask for your questions on the Instagram. If you're not following us already, please do at The Villain Pod. And that covers all social media, YouTube and TikTok. We ask for your questions, and today we're going to try our best to answer them. So should be a pretty exciting show. Sam, you've got the questions. How are you feeling about it all?
Yes, this will be a nice thing. We like to do these kind of reach out ones. 9 times out of 10, these episodes are us talking to you guys. These feel like almost like it's an opportunity for you guys to talk to us. So I like these Q&As dotted around every now and again. Speaking of fans talking to us, before we get into the Q&A, we should probably wrap up some, we've got some good YouTube comments, particularly around WrestleMania. We had some questions or some loose ends, and some Philly natives have tied those up for us, so we could do that as well. Should we just get into it?
Yeah, well, I think first we should just tell the listeners, this is because we reviewed WrestleMania 40 or WrestleMania XL a few weeks back, so we put our review out there, and I'm guessing you're letting us know what the response was to our review.
Yes. So the first thing that we did was, like, we didn't know there were some, like, kind of rituals, if you want to call it that we were questioning. So the first one was, there was a lot of the green trunks, like the dark green trunks. And we thought it was like a WrestleMania ripoff, if you want to call it that.
Is it football?
Yep. So RBlair69 lets us know that dark green is the color of the Philadelphia Eagles, who call the Lincoln Financial Field home. So thank you to RBlair69. That kind of wraps that up. However, I understand that. To me, it's still like a flimsy reference, you know? It's just, hey, another team I'm just going to wear, you know, like, so if they're in, like, Dallas, do they just wear white and blue? Like, it doesn't really, like, what is that? I don't know. How do you feel about that? Was that enough to satiate your, like, are you cool with that?
I mean, yeah. I think I probably did know that the Eagles wore that green, but, dude, American football, I'm just pretty clueless at.
I know, me
British
too.
Football, I'm all about, but yeah. I guess with WrestleMania, they need inspiration from something for gear. So, okay, we do the sports team. Wasn't that, that was John Cena's original gimmick when he first started in the WWE, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he had the, because he had the jersey.
Yeah. And it's funny, actually, I'm pretty sure when, so it was one point where John Cena was going to turn heel. I think it may have been when he was going to wrestle The Rock for the first time. He's spoken about it. And he was going to change all his gear, and he got like 20 different singlets or leotards or whatever you want to call them made up. I'm pretty sure he got them made up from a gear lady that I know and have used a bunch of times. I'm sure she told me about it, but he got sort of 20 leotards made up, and they were all of the different sports teams' colors. So when he goes to the city, he wears them. I think, mind you, if he's a heel, would that make sense? I'm not sure. But he did that with his biker shorts originally before he became sort of the John Cena that we all know and love. So yeah, but for me, it all goes completely over my head. They could be colors. Like, you could name football teams now and ask me the team colors, and I don't think I could tell you any, really, other than the Eagles right now.
If he's got different outfits for every team, every city team, and he's a heel, he could just wear their rivals' ones to that city, right? That's what I would have done.
I guess so. I guess so.
You know I like the cheap heat. You know, yeah, I do.
I guess
I have to have it. Another one was Seth Rollins' entrance for the second. Was it the second day?
Yes.
Of WrestleMania.
The match, you mean, with Drew?
Yeah. I think that was the one where he came in with that kind of, we thought it was carnival or some sort of like New Orleans thing, and we thought that was kind of unrelated and off, and we kind of dumped on it a little bit. Well, Devon B 3735 lets us know, I'm from Philadelphia. It's a Philly tradition, and they're called the Mummers. And we Googled that, and yes, that is exactly what it is. So wow. I feel like I'm doing a 180 here. originally I thought this was like the flimsiest, you know, I was kind of annoyed with stuff. I was like, what is that? It's just something for the sake of it. But actually, I think this is probably one of the strongest, if not the strongest, like reference, right? For in all the entrances. So there you go. Well, I've done a 180 on that. How do you feel about that?
Well, thank you, Devin. For, is Devin B?
Yeah.
Is that his name?
Devin B,
thank you,
yep.
Thank you for letting us know. I watched the show with a whole bunch of different people, so I probably wasn't really concentrating on the commentary. Did they reference this on his entrance? Like, surely they should tell you, because there's a whole, you know, I assume people in America understand that, but the rest of the world, I doubt, know about Philadelphia's, you know, traditions and stuff. Well, that sounds kind of like I'm dumping on people, but yeah, I mean, I didn't know, you didn't know.
No, it's so true. It's true. Yeah.
Did they not reference it?
I mean, I didn't pick up on that. Maybe they did, but let's say they didn't, or let's say they did. It's kind of largely irrelevant to what I'm going to say. What do you think is like the perfect balance? Do you reckon there's a balance towards, because obviously like doing these like deep cultural little cuts, like will really affect the home city where that is. And that's like a very nice thing to do. It's like, hey, I'm here. I'm like, I'm in your city. I want to be respectful. Like, here's my gift back to you sort of thing. It's just really awesome. But also you're on a massive worldwide PLE, right? Mm-hmm. That everyone's going to watch. And that will just, so like for 99.9% of the people watching, it's going to look odd and irrelevant, but to that 0.1%, it's going to be everything. Do you reckon, like, which way would you lean? Would you, if it was up to you, like, where's the sweet spot?
Well, now they have it where the cities bid on the shows. So the shows are typically, like we've noticed, reviewing these pay-per-views, they're kind of celebrating the cities that they're in. We've seen that before with they're in St. Pete's Beach, and they kind of they show these commercials really putting over the place. So, and I assume that the cities bid a you know, high amount because they want to get a lot of people and traffic into their into their city. So I think I'm actually kind of for it, because for years they would run, you know, Raw or SmackDown in different city every week, but watching the show, you could not tell whatsoever. It just looked completely the same. I do kind of miss that from back in the day, especially like the 70s and 80s. The buildings that they ran, they all looked different. So everything had a different flavor rather than just looking like you know, in more modern wrestling, it's all completely the same. It just, they could be anywhere. Do you know what I mean? They might as well just be in a studio. So I quite like the different flavors from different places, I think, personally.
Yeah. I mean, and it works because we questioned it, we Googled it, that sort of thing. And now we know something about that city's culture that we didn't. True. And that's good for these tourist boards. And I think that's exactly why they're doing it. So I think, yeah, I think it's pretty cool to do these kind of very, if you're leaning towards these kind of more, whatever you want to call them, like deeper cultural references. It's kind of cool. It's fun to figure out these things as well.
It definitely was very Philadelphia themed, even to the
oriented
to the ECW kind of callbacks and stuff as well.
Yeah, I've got two more comments, so we'll get to the Q&A. And these aren't related to any of these in any way, but I just have to bring them up to you. So the first one was, do you remember Bubba Ray Dudley talking of the ECW callbacks? That's my segue.
Yeah.
You thought he looks like Alex Jones. I thought he looked like Samoa Joe. How David Ryan 834 says Samoa Jones. Like, how did we not think of that? Why didn't we come up with that?
That's
so obvious now. Yeah, he's so obvious now. He's Samoa Jones. But one thing, so we saw this one that it just made us crack up. We did a short about, did the Attitude Era take it too far with the Big Boss Man getting hanged against the cage? And we got No P 304.
Hang on, said, I feel like you're under
downplaying it.
You're downplaying it. People, I'm sure they remember WrestleMania 15, Undertaker versus Boss Man, Hell in a Cell match. After the match, they hung Big Boss Man from like the ceiling. You know, I don't think it's from the cage. Like,
oh, okay.
Yeah, and it was pretty damn
by his neck. Yeah, his like neck. An execution.
Yes.
Yes.
So,
okay, sorry. And then No P304 said, people like these two, that's you and me, Marty, is why the Attitude Era couldn't make it today. Too many softies. And maybe he's right. Maybe we are getting soft. I don't know.
I
feel like I didn't like it back in the day, though, when I was a kid. And I was edgier.
Like, we are I would say I'm one of the least soft people. And we weren't necessarily complaining about it. We were just, that Big Boss Man being hung, we suggested, that's probably a bit too far. And I wasn't like offended by it. I just like my wrestling to be realistic and be able to believe in the wrestling. And him being hung, I thought was pretty damn stupid. But it wasn't a case of me being offended or anything else. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I wasn't offended, but I was more questioning. I mean, we talked about this to a certain extent last week with AEW Dynamite. Just like shock for shock's sake, or like controversy for controversy's sake, like doesn't always work whether you're offended or not. And that's just how I felt about that. It's like it just went to, it's almost like a shark jumping moment. And yeah, you're right, like it decredits like the believability of everything at that point. So I think that's
And I'm pretty sure Vince Russo has been on record that he would have like the local, whatever city they're in, like the local stunt coordinators there, and he would essentially ask them what they could do, and they would tell them him like different things he could do, and then he would try to write it into the show, right? Which is kind of, again, it's kind of like you're doing it for the sake of doing it. Like, unfortunately, I think that's how the Owen Hart thing happened, where the stunt company, they were like, oh, we can do this. And, you know, Russo is like, how do I write that in a show? And he's like, oh, it'd be perfect for Owen with his superhero gimmick, the Blue Blazer. And then obviously what happened. So I got a feeling the Boss Man thing was probably something similar. Like, I doubt the long-term storyline for that was, oh, we should end it with Undertaker hanging Boss Man. The stunt coordinators probably said, oh, we could do this. And like, oh, that'd be perfect for the Undertaker. So they're just doing, like you said, doing it for the sake of doing it. So that's another reason why I was offended by it. No, I wasn't offended, but that is funny. Dude, the YouTube comments, I feel like Instagram is typically the most fair. YouTube comments sometimes are just really out there.
They're all over the place, aren't they?
Yeah, they're pretty, like, so we get a bunch of good ones, and so we appreciate that. But we welcome all the comments, and quite often, certainly if I have a bit of spare time, I will go on to these different social medias and I will kind of discuss and debate with people. Because I've had a whole bunch of discussions and debates talking about the Big Boss Man. I think it was that same reel. I don't know if you brought this up before, but in the video, you say something about, oh, you know, that could be like a kid's favorite wrestler, and you know, watching him be hung, that's horrible. And then someone was like,
one's favorite was the Big Boss Man,
right? And I said, well, you know, you maybe you're right. I said, but obviously he was a popular wrestler at one point, and had this whole debate with this person where they suggested that Big Boss Man was never anything more than a lower mid card and was never over. And I was like, dude, okay, that run, the corporation run, like, you could maybe argue that, but back in the early 90s,
Big Boss Man was one of, classic. Yeah,
he was one of the biggest stars, and he was one of the biggest baby faces. And he did a main event run with Hogan and everything else. It's like, but Big Boss Man back then, he was definitely over, but they were arguing that he was never over. I'm like, dude, go back and watch the early 90s. Boss Man was one of the most over guys on the show. And they always give it the whole, were you watching back then? Did you even used to watch? And I'm thinking, like, to me, saying that I watched is not a flex. But it's like, I'm pretty sure you didn't watch if you watched him back then.
That.
I didn't think he was over. That was another one. A lot of people debated me about the European title. I suggested that, we both did, that it never really had any importance and was never really treated as a big deal. And loads of people, well, maybe not loads, but a handful of people arguing, no, the European title was a big deal. It was. And I was going, okay, name some big feuds that it had. Like, Bulldog won it in the first place, and then he lost it to Shawn Michaels at One Night Only. That seemed like a big deal. But then after that, it was just, you know, Michaels never defended it. He gave it to Triple H. Later on, I think when Jarrett won it, he gave it to Mark Henry. It was always a low mid-card belt. And there was a handful of people, again, arguing that it's the same level as the US title. I'm like, well, the US title in WCW was always a big deal. And in WWE, it's still a big deal. Like at WrestleMania, Randy Orton, Logan Paul, Kevin Owens have been wrestling for it. I was like, it was definitely way below the US title. And again, people there were saying, did you even used to watch? I'm like, okay. I don't know. Viewers, like, I feel like people like to romanticize things and nostalgia. The actual European title belt, the look of it, super cool. Actually one of my favorites, but let's not pretend that it was a big deal. Honestly, during the Attitude Era, they didn't even really treat the IC title like a big deal, yet alone though. Right. You know what I mean? Well, European, at some points they did. Maybe when Triple H and The Rock wrestled for it, yeah, but then like in 99 and yeah, it wasn't a big deal. But the European title, no, I'm sorry. No. It's not romanticized. But yeah, please engage with us on the social media. And if you get a reply on there, chances are it will be from me. So you get to discuss and debate with the one true villain.
That brings us nicely to our first question. You are the one true villain. True. And that's established as fact. That's canon. And that is just the lore of the world now.
Yeah.
You have, however, had lots of different gimmicks in the past, like Party Marty and all of those, which I also kind of liked. Edgama01 asks, what would be, or do you have, like, or have you had any new concepts, like concepts for a new character that you could develop for yourself? Has that ever crossed your mind? Or are you, I feel like you're all in on the villain, but that's my perspective.
I'm all in on the villain. So realistically, it's less about coming up with new gimmicks and more about sort of developing and evolving the current one. Right. And taking it in different directions and adding things and letting the gimmick grow. I feel like now I'm not saying it's impossible, but I just couldn't really see myself ever fully moving away from the villain. I feel like, for me, it's like what the Hitman is to Bret Hart or what the Heartbreak Kid is to Sean. Yeah. It's a part of them. So, but that's not to suggest that the gimmick couldn't evolve, which I feel like I try to do as much as I can. That being said, I do often come up with gimmicks for other people. One that I keep thinking of or thought of recently, and I'm surprised this has not been a thing, but especially like in NXT or something, wouldn't it be cool to have like a heel stable of young guys, like in the early 20s, or guys and girls, and like they're called Gen Z, and that's like the gimmick? I thought that would be kind of cool, no?
Well, we've had the Generation X.
Right.
So now we're having the Generation Z.
It could be D Generation Z.
Yeah, but yeah.
Maybe that's what Tommaso Ciampa and...
Oh, we're going for, yeah.
But I thought that would be kind of cool. Like young guys that are really arrogant and everything else. And get
So basically NXT.
The whole of NXT. But no, I do come up from time to time for different gimmicks. And often as well, like, I don't know if too many people know this, but I do have a handful of clients that I teach. I do wrestling training essentially on Zoom virtually. And obviously it's not physical, but I'm typically going through guys, I'm watching their matches, I'm giving them feedback, I'm giving them critique, and I help them develop characters, gimmicks, promos, all these sort of things. So I'm kind of constantly thinking about different gimmicks and personas and whatnot. And I feel like the people, that sounds like a little commercial right now, but the people that have done sessions with me, they always come back for more. So like they always, they book one and then they're like, oh, I need to book more. Then they do another one. They're like, oh, I need to book more. So I feel like the talents that are doing that, they're definitely getting their money's worth and they're definitely getting a lot from it. So, and that's the thing with wrestling, learning wrestling, the physical part, like, yeah, that's difficult, but the psychology
creative
part is,
and, yeah.
Yeah, that's like the most difficult part by far. Do you know what I mean? And that's honestly the most important part. So yeah, if you're a wrestling talent and you want to learn from the villain, hit me up. You can check out, you can book sessions at martyscale.bigcartel.com and I would be happy to help. So yeah, great question.
Similar related question. Plights or Plates asks, who outside of wrestling, if anyone, have you looked to for inspiration for the villain character? So maybe like movie or TV or, you know, anything else. Like who have you, like, where have you picked from and plucked from?
You know what? I absolutely have, but now you've hit me on the spot with the question. It's kind of like, I think, you know, definitely took some influence from Clockwork Orange. Mm-hmm. Definitely even stuff like, I mean, the influence can be super duper minor. Like I've even taken influence from guys like Russell Brand. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like a British guy, how he's perceived by America and everything else. So I have been influenced by so much, but it's all been like tiny little things. And it might even just be the case of like a word or whatever it might be. Do you know what I mean? I feel like every wrestler now is, oh, I was influenced by the Joker.
Right.
Which won't say I was, but yeah, no, I tried to take influence from a lot of things. And if I do, I typically try to not take it away from wrestling. Obviously, I am going to be influenced by wrestling. And if I am influenced by anything in wrestling, I'll try and pick something super obscure. I won't be like, oh, I'm going to try and do this like Shawn Michaels because everyone knows him. Do you know what I mean? But I'll watch like wrestling from the 1960s in France, for example. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I can take something from this. So yeah, I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I can't really think of any, but I gave a couple of examples. So
yeah. What about though for
the Penguin, obviously?
The Penguin is a big one. What about like costumes? Like, so for like maybe bespoke entrances, do you have like, do you look like watch a movie or something and be like, oh, I'm stealing that look? Because I know when we played Tekken 7, Miguel's jacket, you were just in love with, and I never saw it like become a entrance to you, but I can tell you kind of do maybe take influence from styles. So not character wise, but aesthetically for individual things.
Absolutely. And it's funny because the Plague Doctor mask that I wear, that came from an album cover that I saw once. And it's annoying because I can never remember what the album was, but I just remember seeing that on an album cover. And when I saw it, I thought, huh, you know, that would be really kind of cool for an entrance, not my whole gimmick. Because at the time I was just wearing the fur coat and the glasses.
The glasses,
it's funny because I feel like this is one of my influences on the business. Now, so many people wear those glasses, but I'm pretty sure I was one of, maybe not the first, because at one point I think Brett wore like round glasses, but mine were more like sunglasses / goggles. Now you see so many people wearing them. So I tend to like mix it up. Like I think LA Knight even wears them now. Yeah. But yeah, I saw that Plague Doctor mask on that album. I thought, you know what? That'd be really cool for an entrance. And it was supposed to be a one-off entrance, but I wore it and people seemed to really like it. And I think the next few days I saw fans doing fan art of me in the mask. And I thought, you know what? There may be something to this mask. And that's typically how I've worked out so much stuff in wrestling. It's just throwing stuff at the wall, trying things. Some things stick, some things don't. And that's my advice I would say to any wrestlers out there trying to make it or get a break or whatever it is, don't be afraid to try stuff. And if you're not where you want to be right now, it's because you haven't tried enough. Do you know what I mean? So just keep at it and just keep trying. And you'll know if it works or not. Same thing with the umbrella. When I first did that, I remember I did it. And then the next week I had a flight somewhere, maybe to Scotland. And I thought, I'm not taking this umbrella. That's too much to travel with, which is funny because I do it every week now. So I didn't take the umbrella. And then I remember getting a tweet from a fan saying, oh, I can't wait to see Mighty Skull tonight and his umbrella. And I was like, damn it, better go get an umbrella today when I got there. So then that stuck as well. So yeah, it's I take influence from a lot. And I'm always, my brain is very much just wrestling all the time, where like anything I see, I tend to tie it back to wrestling. Like I'm the kind of guy that will go to a wedding and be like, oh, we could run a wrestling show in this venue. Do you know what I mean? Like it's just always switched on. And you kind of have to be, I feel. You kind of have to be.
Yeah. You mentioned the Plague Doctor mask being kind of like a resounding success with the audience. And obviously you took that as like a creative sign. Like, oh, I should keep this. Was that also like a commercial reason as well? Because obviously it must have crossed your mind like, oh, because they're so wildly popular every time, you know, they sell out whenever you did them. Did you like kind of clock on quite early that, oh, I could actually, you know, sell these as merchandise? Like
a way to signature, monetize the
gimmick or... Yeah.
Yeah, well, to a degree, yes, but that wasn't necessarily the reason why. But that's the thing with wrestling. You want to have all these different... what's the word I'm looking for? You were struggling for
avenues.
Like components or characteristics that are associated with you. So because of the mask, because the umbrella, because of the hat, whatever else that goes with it. So if I design a t-shirt now, for example, there's stuff to play with to put on that shirt. Do you know what I mean? If you're just like, if right now you don't have a gimmick because obviously you're not a wrestler, but right now it would just be a t-shirt. It would just say Sam Scott. Do you know what I mean? Whereas
right. You start adding, what can you do with that?
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So kind of the more you add, not saying you need loads, but you need these flavors. You need to add these different components. So you have stuff to play with. Do you know what I mean? And again, I've said this a million times, but all great characters can be recognized from their silhouette. And my silhouette with the top hat and the plague mask, there's, you know, there's no second questioning who that is. Do you know what I mean? That is me. So yeah, it's all a part of it. And again, this sounds like I'm giving myself too much credit, but screw it. I'm going to do it because no one else.
It's your podcast, man.
It's my podcast. I'm not saying I was the first person ever to wear an entrance mask, but I feel like I definitely popularized it in the modern era because I started wearing an entrance mask. And now it feels like so many talents come to the ring with an entrance mask. And a lot of the times I feel like they're doing it wrong because it's not actually tied to the gimmick and doesn't necessarily have any meaning. They're just wearing it for the sake of it's a cool mask. But yeah, I think like I for sure had an influence on that. I think a lot of people saw how kind of that works so well for me coming up with this gimmick and people wanted to follow suit. So yeah, my influence on the business, which I'll probably never get credit for. So I'm giving it to myself.
Fair play. Speaking of your entrances, Justin R. Mitchell asks, could you take us through the process for the entrance gear for your Tokyo Dome shows?
So we've done that before on the podcast. There's actually a reel, which is, I believe, is on both my Instagram and the Villain Pod Instagram, and probably YouTube and TikTok. So you'd probably have to go back a little bit, but I did go through the whole thing. So I'll just do like footnotes right now. I found a lady in the UK that could make stuff, and she'd never made wings this big before, but I asked if she could do it. She said yes. She made the whole thing, and then I was living in England at the time, and you had to transport it in what they call like a Christmas tree bag. It's this massive bag with like foam in it and stuff. And she gave it to me, and then she sent me all these videos about like how to put it together. Right, that was the worst thing, is like you had to put the whole thing together. So I flew it to Tokyo, and then day of the show, I'm trying to put the thing together, and it's like a million pieces and very difficult. And I'm spending hours and hours trying to get it together. Finally, like the New Japan staff and like technicians end up helping me out, and it all worked great, which is a relief because at first only one wing was going up. But yeah, it was a lot of work, but it was, it was worthwhile. And it's funny because Cody tweeted a picture of me backstage putting the wings together. And I think I quote tweeted it and was like, do it yourself or whatever. As in like, I'm legit, you know, they don't do this in WWE. Like I'm literally making my entrance on the day of the show. And I remember a bunch of different, I guess like Marty Scurll haters were like saying that I was trying to claim that I made the actual wings. I'm like, you know, they're like, he's trying to take credit for making the wings. He didn't make them. This woman made them. Cause I guess the woman also put it out on social media. And I was thinking, no, my do it yourself. I don't mean I created the wings. I'll happily give credit to this lady. She was great. Who made them. I can't remember her name. That was years ago. But I meant do it yourself as in I'm making them up before the show, you know, but that's social media. They can find a way to spin anything into negativity.
Right, yeah,
but it's probably if I had to pick a favorite entrance of all time, it's for sure that one. It's probably the one that gets most spoke about. So, and the thing is, the wings were such a pain. I kind of regret this now, but I ended up giving them to one of my sponsors in Japan because I just didn't want to travel with them. And I thought, well, once the entrance has been done, I can't really, in my head, I thought I can't really do it again. Do you know what I mean? I was like, it's done now. So I gave them to a sponsor because it was just such a nightmare to travel with and to store and everything else. I guess I could do it again. So maybe one day I'll try and track them down or just pay for them again. But it was expensive as well. It's probably about a $3,000 entrance. But to me, it was a worthwhile investment.
I mean, people are still talking about it, right? We're getting questions about it. So
that's very true. There you go.
Speaking of working in foreign promotions, a strange man called Flip Gordon asks, who's your favorite American wrestler in Mexico? Very specific. So yeah, I think he's trying to lean into something here. But
Sam Adonis.
There we go.
No, we love Flip. Hello, Flip. That's a funny question. Yes. Flip's been doing really well. He's moved to Mexico. And he's working full time for CMLL now. I always struggle to say that CMLL. And he's wrestling at the top of the card and he seems to be doing really, really well. So I'm very happy for him.
Yeah. So taking Flip's question and just kind of extending it, you wrestle a lot in Mexico as well. Who do you look to as like foreign wrestlers? So non-Mexican wrestlers who you've been working with on these cards, these promotions, who have also impressed you, who we might not know about or you want to give a shout out to?
Sorry, you're asking me like Mexicans or not Mexicans?
No. So he asked who's your favorite American wrestler in Mexico. So I'm extending the question to like foreign, so non-Mexican wrestlers on these promotions that you go to like stand out and impress you that you can give a spotlight on?
Yeah. Well, funny enough, I just got back from Mexico a few days ago. I once again main evented AAA show in Tijuana and was victorious. So that was very nice. Honestly, typically when I do these shows, there's not really many American wrestlers on them, if at all. Do you know what I mean? So that's really hard to kind of give you an answer. In the six-man tag that I did this week or last week, there was a guy called Jack Cartwheel that was in the match that I'm sure fans are kind of familiar with. And it was the first time that I got to kind of do anything with him, and he seemed very talented. He seemed like he, you know, could have a really bright future, so I would definitely suggest he's one to look out for. But typically off the top of my head, I'm trying to think, there's really not many American wrestlers in Mexico.
What about British or Canadian or Australian, South African? Like,
that's what I mean, there's not really. I'm sure there is, but I'm getting a blank runner. The Sam Adonis wrestles over there a lot. He's American. He's been around for years. He's very good. I mean, I think Rocky Romero is wrestling a lot in CMLL, but that's pretty much it, really, it seems. It's not, I think for Americans and stuff, it's kind of hard to break into Mexico unless they live there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would think so. Yeah. But, you know, there's been foreigners that have done really well in Mexico before, obviously.
Mark Jindrak.
Jindrak, obviously. Yeah, big time. Yep. Mark Jindrak did so huge. Well. Obviously, Vampiro is like a legend there. He's Canadian. Black Magic back in the day, which is Norman Smiley. He was a big deal in Mexico. So
excellent. Brand O'Cash asks, what, in your opinion, is your favorite or the best Owen Hart promo?
The best Owen Hart promo. I kicked your leg out from underneath your leg is what stands out. I can't necessarily think of a like specific promo for Owen, but I think majority of people can agree that his best work was that feud with Bret Hart. Do you know what I mean? Any of those promos, I think, you know, Owen complaining about how Bret is jealous of him and or how, you know, Owen's been in Bret's shadow and everything else. I think that's one of my favorite storylines of all time. And I really felt like that was the time to elevate Owen. Obviously, he did get elevated, but I mean, if he was ever going to win a world title, it would have been then, it seems. But I can't pinpoint like an actual promo other than the kick the leg out from underneath your leg, which I still think was a great, great promo.
So that promo, the other one, would that have been your answer if there wasn't the giant spit string after the match?
That as well. Yeah. that was such a shame. Bless him. But no, I love Owen Hart. One of my favorites.
Awesome. Black Straggler asks, you're going to love this question. This is right up your alley. If not Pete's, which I wouldn't agree with, what is the best coffee in the world? What's your favorite coffee, Marty?
Yeah, I had Pete's coffee the other day and I did not think it was good at all. My favorite coffees are the ones that you have at home and the pods that cost 30, 40, 50 cents, not spending $5-$7 at a coffee place. I'm really against that. But obviously, from time to time, being on the road, I have to do it. Back in the UK, there's a place called Costa, which I really, really
I'm
liked.
With you on this one. Yeah,
really love Costa. And Starbucks I think is fine as well. I think Starbucks, people typically love it or hate it. I think it's decent. The thing is, I drink black coffee, so it's, I don't know, I'm still kind of, to me, I don't necessarily notice like an amazing coffee. Sometimes if it's bad, I'll notice that, but for the most part, I feel like black coffee's black coffee. I might be really off in saying that, but I don't really notice massive differences. But if I was, you know, I'll drink any of it, to be honest with you. I'll get coffee from Wawa, Dunkin' Donuts, McDonald's, Starbucks. It doesn't really bother me. But I did notice that Pete's coffee was kind of meh, which upset me because, of course, it's like $5 for a black coffee.
Yeah, so I'm with you on that. I drink black coffee, but I'm also, it doesn't have to be expensive. And honestly, one of my favorites, we'll probably get crucified for this, is just literally going to McDonald's. Get McDonald's coffee. I love it.
Yeah, I like McDonald's coffee, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to get something from McDonald's, it's probably the best thing you can get in terms of health.
Yeah, true, true. Do you know the Mr. Brown, like coffee, the cans of coffee, the Mr. Brown iced coffees?
If I saw it, I'd probably recognize it.
Okay. It's got like a rotund fellow with a nice hat on, little cartoon character. I really like those. And I mean, they've got to be terrible for you. I'm pretty sure they have like lead in. But yeah, they're nice as well. But yeah, for me, just like a simple, I really like McDonald's. So there we go.
I think this was when I was in Canada a few months ago. I bought a Coca-Cola and coffee drink, which legit was a can, which was a mixture of coffee and Coca-Cola, right. Whatever you call it. Mm-hmm. And I just bought it because I'd never seen it before and was like, oh, that's interesting. And I assumed that it wouldn't be that good. But I tried it and it was actually surprisingly pretty damn good. I was like, wow, this is actually, it's very interesting. And it legit just tastes like a cross between coffee and Coke. So that was kind of cool.
Those Canadians are very precious about their Tim Hortons, huh?
Oh, that's another one. Tim Hortons coffee.
I've never tried it, but...
Dude, it's probably because I drink black coffee, but I do not understand. I've said this before, I'm sure. I don't understand the Tim Hortons buzz at all, because every time I've tried it and tried their food even, I don't think it's very good at all. The food was not good. The coffee, I just drink black coffee and I didn't think Tim Hortons was any good. I think I asked someone to explain to me like why there's so much hype, and I think it's because of the creamers and the sweetness that people put in. Maybe they've got really great or syrups. I don't do that stuff. So just the normal black coffee, to me, Tim Hortons, not very good.
But
that might be a controversial opinion. They love it.
Sounds like it. Yeah, we'll check the demographics and see our drop off of Canadian listeners next week.
No, I love Canada. I love Canada so much. But
they just go nuts. That Tim Hortons is crazy. I was in the car with your friend, Ariana Grace, who is Canadian.
Yeah.
And we drove past, this was in the US, a billboard that had said Tim Hortons on it. She made us stop the car to like see the billboard. It just turns out like, I think you can get like the pods, like the K-cups or something.
Oh, yeah, advertising okay.
that. She thought like they were coming to the US. And wow. like just the way you, yeah, there's something that in them, that the Canadians, that when they see that sign, they just go feral. I wish I had something where I was like that. Like, that's so cool. That's so cool. I guess mine is McDonald's.
But. Yeah. Well, I guess it's having something of their own. It's so bizarre because I've traveled the world and I've seen Tim Hortons in a bunch of different places. I found it in Mexico. I found it in, I believe I went there in Qatar, a whole bunch of places, but they don't seem to be in America. Maybe there is a few. I can't think off the top of my head, but I'm guessing Canadians love it because it's kind of their own. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Which makes total sense.
They're way more obsessed with Tim Hortons than Brits are with Costa, I would say, or Cafe Nero. Do you know what I mean?
I wish more British people were militant about Costa coffee because it's really good. It's really good. And that's one thing I do miss about the UK is not having a Costa.
Well, British people typically drink tea, so.
Yes, that is true. That is true. One drink that you can get in Mexico that I miss in the UK is Dr. Pepper with actual sugar and not high fructose corn syrup. It tastes like a totally different thing. And if you're close to the border, so San Antonio, for example, you can get the green Dr. Peppers that are sugar instead of, that is a drink that I go crazy for. So next time you're in Mexico, make sure you get a real Dr. Pepper because it's just like the UK ones.
I don't like sugar in my drinks.
That's true. Well, I don't drink one for me.
I don't drink calories, bro.
Yeah, fair. That's why I thought you'd like the question so much, the coffee question. Yeah. So here's a question. Tommy Duncan 93 asks, has there been a match where you looked at the outcome and it's just one that in history that you would love to have, if you could, have rebooked and changed for the better?
I assume he just means any match.
Yep, any match.
Because this, again, this is going to sound really egotistical, but I think the one
match... So any match in the world in history, you're going to pick one of your own.
Well, it's just the first thing that comes to mind. And I think the fans or the listeners to this show would agree. Madison Square Garden Supercard of Honor, when I didn't win the world title. The year previously, I'd wrestled Dalton Castle and didn't win the world title. And everyone, not everyone, but I think a lot of fans were let down. And then at MSG, we legit had 18,000 people or 20,000, whatever it was, sold out. And the majority of them had paid just to see me win, just climb that ladder, grab that belt, and give everyone a happy moment. And they didn't go with that. And like Taven, Matt Taven, I think it's a great talent, but and I think even he knew. It's just kind of like, yeah, this is the fans want to see, you know, Marty win the world title, and you didn't give it to him last year. And there's only so much you can like not give the fans what they want. It's like they legit paid for this and a lot of money. Like, we got to deliver. And I've never refused to do a job or anything like that ever. I get given creative and whatever it is, I'm just like, sure, I'll make it work. And they didn't let us know what the result was going to be till like an hour or so before the show. We're in the room with the like the boss and the booker, and then they tell us, right, it's Taven. And I was like, well, good for Taven, that's cool. But in my head, I was thinking, oh man, this is not going to be good. And again, I'm not like a big mark. Like, would it be not cool to win the world title? Sure. But I was more thinking about the fans. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't like, I want to be champion. I just want to deliver a good show. Do you know what I mean? I cared about the company, and I thought this is not going to be beneficial to the company. So that's why I thought it was bad for business, I thought, personally.
Right.
And again, I don't want to sound like I'm taking anything away from Matt Taven, because he's a great guy and a great wrestler. I think I could have, if they gave the fans what they want, I could have lost it like the next week. Do you know what I mean? And it's funny because they pretty much just didn't put it on me because they thought I was going to leave and go to AEW. But I'm pretty sure I still had like 7, 8, or 9 months left on my deal. Probably like
that's
9 months.
That's plenty of time.
And Taven actually had less on his deal than I did. But they were just so sure I was going to leave. But again, it's like, dude, the fans there, if you watch that show, I come out and get a thunderous ovation. And when I don't win, like, it's almost like you can hear a pin drop. It's like, it was the wrong decision. So one of my own matches. In terms of other matches, that's a great question. Is there any other matches? I'm sure there are, where people should have won. This is why maybe I should read these questions beforehand.
Yeah, so we should say these were on your account, but as like to the best of you that you could, you haven't seen these. I'm sure you may have accidentally seen one or two, but yeah, this is like the first time you've been seeing these.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, but I'd like to have seen Owen Hart win the world title. He had that cage match at SummerSlam with Bret Hart. Maybe Owen should have won that. And I'm sure there's more. A lot of people say that Booker T should have beaten Triple H at WrestleMania. Also, I think WrestleMania 2000, we covered that on the show before, right? Triple H winning was probably the wrong result as well. Should have been The Rock. But I'm sure there's loads.
Gotcha. Okay, got two similar questions to each other. So Irie, I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. Irie asks, because you've shone a spotlight on some British wrestlers that we feel like people may not have seen before. So, we know Les Kellett, but Leon Harris, for example. And I feel like that was like very popular. People did kind of enjoy you doing that. Irie asks, who do you think is the most underrated English wrestler of all time and why? So is there someone more so than Leon Harris?
Yeah, I mean, there's a, you'll laugh, but there's a wrestler called Peter Kay, Tally Ho Peter Kay, who like I just absolutely loved. Yeah,
really?
I'm sure, you know, you ask 100 wrestling fans who that is and they probably would not know. Obviously, they know the comedian Peter Kay. So Tally Ho Peter Kay, someone, but there's loads of underrated British wrestlers. There's another guy who was kind of in the world of sport era, but a bit later. Towards the end of it, called Kid McCoy, who I thought was a tremendous wrestler. Again, most people probably wouldn't even know who that is. There's some others that are a bit more famous, but probably still don't get the credit they deserve, like Clive Myers, I thought was amazing. Mm-hmm. It feels like one of the only kind of British technicians that gets credit now is Johnny Saint, but there was also Steve Gray, who I got the chance to wrestle, and Mal Sanders. And I would argue those guys were just as good, if not better, than Johnny Saint. Do you know what I mean? But they never really seemed to get any credit. I mean, obviously, there's the ones that people do. I feel like Mark Rocco is kind of finally getting some kind of credit now to a degree. But dude, I could do a list all day of these British wrestlers, because the majority of them aren't well-known or appreciated outside of, like I said, Johnny Saint, the obvious ones that broke out in America, more like Davey Boy and Regal, and then sort of Kendo Nagasaki, Big Daddy, Giant Haystacks, Mick McManus, maybe a Les Kellett. I'm sure there's some others that people remember, but there's so many more that people don't remember. So, I think I named a whole bunch there. So go watch some old Raw Sport.
Yeah, dude, you should do like a dream project. You should like narrate or do a documentary on like classic British wrestling, man.
Well, I actually have thought of similar ideas before, because it seems like, unfortunately, with British wrestling, there doesn't seem to be any, I mean, there is, but I'd say British wrestling has like the least amount of documentation. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's no real, I'm sure there's a couple, but there's like, it's not like there's a whole bunch of shoot interviews from, you know, those British wrestlers from back in the 60s, 70s and 80s. Do you know what I mean? A lot of stuff just isn't covered, and like, we have the footage from World of Sport, but like, there's not a million books and stuff on them. There's not a million documentaries. There's some, but it's nowhere near as covered as much as, you know,
it's not as archived
not as archived at all. And I did think a while back, I thought, oh, next time I'm in England, I might try and record shoot interviews with some of the wrestlers that are still with us. And I was like, I'll pay them, and just, you know, I can document all this stuff. Unfortunately, though, it's like, as time is ticking, there's less and less of them are still with us. You know what I mean? But I really would like to sort of document it and get a better understanding of it all myself, and obviously put it out there to the fans. The thing is, the British wrestling is strange, the history of it, because it's kind of like, it's weird. Like, it was on TV and the houses. I mean, obviously in England, it's just smaller buildings as a whole. But wrestling was so popular back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and it used to do incredible ratings on the TV. Yet, at the same time, it still didn't seem to be like big, big business for the talents. Do you know what I mean? Like, the wrestlers weren't making millions, absolutely not. Right. They weren't even making six figures. A lot of them were still getting paid $20 or £20 for a match, or 60 at maximum. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of bizarre. That's why a lot of British wrestlers back then had normal jobs, daytime jobs as well. So it's very interesting. And British wrestling never really did angles quite like America did. Like, American, or the territories, was all built on angles and during returns. Whereas, not saying they never did them in British wrestling, but for the most part, they didn't. And they didn't really do interviews or promos either. It's just like a whole different
up for the matches. And that's,
right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was presented like just full on like a sport, I guess, you know? Mm-hmm, so it's very, very different from any other wrestling out there.
How about that then?
How about
for
that
an answer?
Then?
Yeah. And AEW fan 916 asks, so like, not just England, who do you think is the most, so number one, most underrated wrestler right now? Very open question.
Oh, wow. Right now?
Like, current, yeah.
That's a kind of layered question. Mm-hmm. I think the Motor City Machine Guns are incredible. Mm-hmm. Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin, but I feel like people do.
They're kind of rated, though.
I guess they are kind of rated, but not rated.
They're
enough.
Just not where they should be. Yes.
Yeah. Right. In my opinion, I think that I did see something the other day, some post on Instagram, some wrestling like website or whatever, being like, oh, is our fans sort of overhyping Logan Paul? I'm thinking, if you think he's overhyped, then he's underrated. Do you know what I mean? Because like, he's one of like the greatest out there right now. It's just insane for how long he's been doing it.
I was going to ask you, if you didn't bring him up, if you think Logan Paul is underrated, but why was I even worried that you weren't going to bring him up?
Well, some people, I think most people definitely sing his praises, but if people are still not on the boat,
on board,
on board, then he's 100% underrated.
Gotcha.
It's difficult because I feel like for the most part, kind of with the social media now and stuff, most wrestlers, if they're good, they're going to be seen and get that kind of appreciation, you know? So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of guys in Mexico that are great and, you know, maybe people haven't seen, but no, it's a very difficult question. I'll say those are my answers for now. I'm sure there's better ones, but Machine Guns and Logan Paul is what I'm going to say right now. I wanted to take a minute to talk about our newest sponsor, madcatbeardcare.com. Myself, I have a beard. Sam, you have a beard. Beards are very popular now, but you've got to take care of your beard. You've got to get yourself over to madcatbeardcare.com. I'm looking at the oils and the balms on there. First of all, they're all designed by different pro wrestlers and marketed as different pro wrestlers. So there's a bunch of guys involved with this, like Matt Cardona, Brian Myers, Delirious, Jay Lethal, a whole collection of awesome wrestlers that have their own products on madcatbeardcare.com. Not only that, but a portion of the profits go to cat rescues around the country. So I think that's already exciting. But the beard oils and the balms both are made from organic argan oil, jojoba, and vitamin E, which when combined helps to soften, strengthen, and vitalize and stimulate circulation in the face, nourishing and strengthening the hair follicles to assist growth. Now, this is what you need. If you've got a patchy beard, you need to get yourself to madcatbeardcare.com. The balms also include the same oil and mixture as the oils, but he adds the shea butter, which helps alleviate itch and irritation to your face, while also helping control pesky stray hairs by allowing you to style them into place. He uses local organic beeswax that helps to get more of a hold to your style. So you got to look after your skin underneath your beard, just like you do your scalp. Like, these aren't things that you can neglect. And that's why we've teamed up with madcatbeardcare.com. And right now, just for listening to the show, you can get yourself a whopping 15% off products at madcatbeardcare.com by using the code VILLAIN. That's 15% for the promo code VILLAIN. That's VILLAIN. Pick yourself up the Villain's Curse, my own beard oil, my own beard balm. That's exactly what I use every day on my face to make my famous beard look beautiful. You can do the same thing too. So last time I'm going to say it, get yourself over now to madcatbeardcare.com. Promo VILLAIN.
Right. We only have time for a couple more questions before we wrap this up. Jake the Classy asks, best current tag teams, maybe a top three.
Well, I was just singing the praises of the Machine Guns.
True, yeah.
I'm sure I saw one of the questions here, which we maybe have not asked because we've answered it before, but people ask, like, what dream matches that could actually happen for you that you never had before? And somehow, some way, I've never been able to wrestle Alex Shelley, and he's always been a dream match of mine. I've got to wrestle Chris Sabin a handful of times and loved it, but I've never wrestled Alex Shelley. And I just think, I think we need to have a great, great match. And I just think he's so talented. I actually had booked that match for Ring of Honor. It may have been in the Pure Wrestling tournament, maybe. I had booked that match, but then obviously COVID happened and everything else happened. And so it didn't happen, which was kind of heartbreaking amongst, you know, everything else. But I would 100% say current tag teams, Machine Guns. I think they're one of the greatest tag teams of all time. And that's why I said they're underrated, because I don't think they get the appreciation. Honestly, like, them and the Briscoe brothers, I think Briscoe's always said, like, greatest tag team, like, arguably of all time. I mean, there's my favorites from back in the day, like the Rockers, the Bulldogs, the Hart Foundation. But in a more modern era, I'd say Briscoe is probably best tag team of all time, and Machine Guns just right behind them. And I guess I give the edge to the Briscoes just because I think they were better on the mic, you know? Not to say that Machine Guns aren't good as well, but both of them, to me, like, two of the biggest tag teams of all time. Obviously, that wasn't the question. It's currently. So I'd say Machine Guns. I guess I have to say the Bucks, you know? And they've just been, you know, phenomenal always, and they're still going strong today. And I guess you'd have to say FTR as well. I think I'm trying to think if there's any real tag teams in WWE, but it doesn't really seem like there's a lot of tag teams. I did wrestle this tag team in Mexico a few weeks ago called, I forget the tag name, but it was, they were called Dragon Bane and Alpha Wolf. They wrestled a lot in NOAH in Japan. And those guys were phenomenal, amazing. I could really see them sort of breaking out more so on the scene, a great tag team. But awesome. Yeah, it's going to go with Machine Guns, FTR, and Bucks. And I'm sure there's teams that I'm missing, so I apologize in advance.
Cool. And thanks, Angel CA, for the dream match question as well, which you answered. Okay, final question is from another strange man, me.
Mm.
You've got your obscure wrestling album covers in the background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know you've got your figures as well, but aside from the figures, you do like your kind of obscure memorabilia.
Yeah.
And I remember when we went to the antique store, that Pat Roach poster that you unfortunately missed out on. So my question is, take figures aside, because that's, you know, there's a podcast for that if you want to listen about wrestling figures. But outside of figures, what's like one piece of wrestling memorabilia that you would just kill for? Like, what's the one thing for you, that like your holy grail?
I don't have or have.
That you don't have, that you would just want so badly.
I don't have?
Yeah. What are you holding out for?
That's a difficult question. I thought you were going to ask me what memorabilia do I have that's like my favorite.
What do you feel like will compete? Like, if you can't get anything else after this, you're cool. You've got this.
I tell you one really funny one. I don't know if it'd be my absolute number one, but back in like 1994, I'm going to say, the WWF released a Quebecers t-shirt. Obviously, my guy PCO and the Mountie. And I think it's Wrestling for Sale. Is it on Instagram or is it Selling Wrestling? But one of them has it. I think it's Wrestling for Sale, has this like red Quebecers t-shirt. And I was like, dude, I need that. And he's like, it's not for sale. And I think if I have seen it for sale, it's been like $500 or something. And I'm thinking, I'm never going to pay that much for a wrestling t-shirt. I don't know if it counts as memorabilia, but like, I would love to have like a ring worn black tiger mask from either Mark Rocco or Eddie Guerrero. I feel like that would be so freaking cool. But honestly, any like ring worn, I don't know if it really counts as memorabilia. I guess it could do. I'd love to have like an original tiger mask or a Jushin Liger mask. And there's a store in Japan, they have them, right? You can buy them, but I'm not going to spend thousands of dollars on it. But if I had to choose something, I would love something like that.
Amazing. Yeah. Mine would be, I know it's a figure, but remember that like solid Hulk Hogan, it has the pull string. He does catchphrases. He does his trademark phrases. I had one of those. I'd love to have one of those again. It's just
you
such
could
a
probably
fun
find
toy.
One of them.
probably. All right. Well, thank you everybody for your amazing questions as always. I had fun doing this and I hope you guys had fun listening to it and sending in your questions and thoughts. Marty, obviously, we hope you had fun too with this one, being grilled live in real time.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I love interacting with our audience. I think it's very important for the growth of the podcast. And we're starting to build up this little community now with everyone. Mm-hmm. And I just really appreciate it. Like at the end of the day, this podcast is nothing without you, the listeners. Right. We are, you know, if we don't have you, there's no point in doing this. So you're, you know, the most important and the biggest part of this podcast. So if you're listening, thank you so much. If you enjoyed the show and you want to help support the show, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That would be really helpful because it helps out with the algorithm and stuff. And yeah, follow us on the social medias, at The Villain Pod.
Perfect. Perfect way to end this, my man. So nothing else from me either. You know what I'm going to say? Have a good week. Till next week.